Hello, good evening. Welcome to Health Matters, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and I'll be your host this evening. The World Health Organization defines health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. Most of the time when we go to the doctor, we are seeking care for a particular ailment, and that's what is treated. But one branch of medicine called integrative medicine looks at treating the whole person. To tell us more about this growing field of medicine and to talk to us about how we can be healthier people, we are joined in the studio tonight by Dr. Nicole Cotter of Integrative Medicine of Shreveport-Bossier, as well as Julie Hartley, wellness dietitian and health coach in the Willis-Knighton Health System. And this is a call-in show, as you know, and so you can call us at 1-800-552-8502 or tweet at RRR Public Radio for any questions or comments you might have about this topic tonight. Julie, welcome back to Health Matters.
Thank you.
So last time you were on the show, we were talking after the show about, you know, some of the things that came up during our, I guess, beginning of the year wellness episode that we had. And the topic of integrative medicine came up. And so from your perspective, how did you get involved with, you know, you're an exercise expert, you're an expert in diets, obviously being a dietitian. So how did you get involved with the concept of integrative medicine?
Actually, I've been in this space my entire career. I was interested just in, you know, some different aspects of medicine, you know, when I initially started. But unlike medical doctors, nutritionists and dietitians, we all already are considered alternative. You know, nutrition was never part of conventional medicine. It's always been pharmaceutical medicine and those types of things. So just even from the beginning as a dietitian, already had kind of the label as, you know, alternative, you know, back then. And I could already see the power of nutrition, you know, when I started, and the, you know, and the benefits of being able to change at least that aspect, you know, even 25 years ago when I started practice, and also adding the exercise aspect. And so I continued to learn and continued to be out there, you know, with articles. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions, you know, about this, you know, this space that we call integrative or functional or lifestyle medicine, is that there's not science to support that. But, you know, as Dr. Cotter will, you know, attest to too, there's so much good science behind this good medicine. It's just now becoming more aware of it. And I think now more patients, that's where a lot of my encouragement comes from. When I'm out in the community, I do a lot of seminars or wellness education in the community, and the patients are getting more educated on this topic. So once the internet hit and people could start to look up things, I started to get more and more questions, which would push me to learn more and more about you know, all different kinds of topics. So it's just been a fascination with my never boring. So we're still such a new science, nutrition is, and lots of you know, new studies constantly coming out. So just trying to stay up on that, never boring.
Again, this is Health Matters. Our topic tonight is integrative medicine. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. I'll be your host, and you can call us if you have questions about this topic at 1-800-552-8502. Dr. Cotter, welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you.
I didn't realize it was your first time here, but I think you're going to be a professional just right out of the chute. So from your standpoint, I know I've known you for a while. You're a board-certified internal medicine doctor. You're board-certified in rheumatology.
Correct.
And I understand now you're board certified in integrative medicine as well. So one of those rare triple boarded physicians. What led you to this specialty of integrative medicine?
I think it was, you know, I've had an interest in these topics for a while, but really I think being out in practice, and I really don't have many patients that come in and don't ask me some sort of question about what should I be eating, or is this supplement worth taking? And I think after a while I just got frustrated not knowing the answer. And so I wanted to know what the science was behind it, what the evidence was behind these things. And so that's what led me to seek out a fellowship in integrative medicine.
So what was that training like for you in terms of, you know, the process of learning about these topics? Obviously, it's not traditional, so there's probably maybe, as Julie mentioned, not as much science as there is maybe you know, with regards to a traditional specialty like rheumatology?
Well, I was actually pleasantly surprised, I think, because it definitely was a concern when I was seeking out fellowships and applying for and starting that I was going to find really a group of kind of very alternative, not evidence-based folks practicing some sketchy stuff. And that wasn't my experience at all. I really was surrounded by highly educated and physicians that were doing some really great things, and it's rooted in evidence. I think that it really is a misconception when it comes to integrative medicine that there isn't science behind these modalities, because that's certainly something we were taught.
So you mentioned, you know, first off, patients are asking us, and it's not, you know, it's not very heartening to have a patient ask us a question and us not really have an answer for it. And so what should patients look for if they're looking for a physician who has this skill set, if they're looking for an integrative medicine doctor?
Well, so I think that also brings up the idea that integrative medicine, you know, although I have a board certification and you think, you know, we think it's a specialty, it really doesn't belong to any particular specialty. And it's just really good medicine, you know, looking at the whole person and more than just a surgery or a pharmaceutical. And so, you know, there are physicians out there that don't have board certifications that really are implementing some of these things, you know, talking to their patients about nutrition and such. To look for somebody who has specific board certification and extra training, then there are places you can go. Obviously, the American Board of Internal Medicine has a website that you can search physicians. The Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine, which is where I did my fellowship, you can search for physicians in your areas or practitioners in your area that are specifically trained or have that extra training in integrative medicine.
Great information. This is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio, and you're listening to our topic tonight about integrative medicine. You can call and ask a question, 1-800-552-8502, or tweet at RRR Public Radio. So, Julie, when you get questions from the patients that you see that lead you down the pathway of integrative medicine, what are the most common questions from patients that you hear?
Well, usually by the time they get to me, they're really frustrated with the system. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, one physician or not, but they might have a problem. Maybe they have multiple problems usually by the time they get to come see me. Maybe they have migraines. Maybe they have some, you know, problems with gut, you know, problems. But they've seen three or four different doctors, you know, joint pain. And you know, one doctor's just dealing with the stomach, one doctor's just dealing with the headaches, you know, and when they come to me, first of all, I get to spend a lot more time. In the current conventional medicine model, you know, there's usually 5 to 7 minutes that a physician has to speak with a patient. And again, that's not to say that one particular physician doesn't want to spend more time and ask how they sleep, how they move, how they think, what are their relationships like. It's just really they're not incentivized to do that. You know, they have you know, a lot of other things they have to take care of, and usually pharmaceuticals are the best way to treat the symptoms that they come in. So when I get to see them, we spend at least an hour and a half together. And so even though they come in thinking that they're specifically going to talk about the diet, when they go through what we call an intake form or a questionnaire, there's questions about, you know, their whole entire lifestyle, you know, even as far back as when they were born. And so those are the kind of questions they're thinking, you know, what in the world does this have to do with, you know, with my diet? And what they quickly become to understand is, yes, their migraines really have a lot to do with their stomach pain. Their stomach pain has a lot to do with their joint pain. And then they start to put it all together. So I think of myself more as coaching them instead of as the conventional medicine model, as more of a parent-child. I get to coach them and they are empowered. And that's really what we'd like to see is instead of just treating them, we want to teach them, and that way they can, you know, can really help themselves. You know, so I get all kinds of different kinds of questions, you know, about their healing, just because they're really wanting somebody to listen, and they're just not being able to find that too in conventional medicine as it is in the current model.
Treating is teaching.
Yes.
Let's go to the phone. We have Leon from Bossier. Leon, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Yes, sir. My question is a definition of integrated medication. You're talking about it, and I don't really understand what you're talking about.
That's a great question. Dr. Carter, from the standpoint of someone, you know, let's say they come to your office and they see your certificate, brand new certificate on the wall, you know, Dr. Carter, board certified in integrative medicine, how would that explanation go for you?
Right. So integrative medicine is basically the intelligent combination of conventional and complementary alternative medicine. And so it is rooted in evidence and using all modalities that would be logical to take care for the person. So, for example, you know, one of the easiest examples to come up with is a patient with hypertension or high blood pressure would go to a traditional clinic, and maybe they have several readings of high blood pressure, and they would be started on a pharmaceutical for management of the blood pressure. An integrative approach would perhaps that patient would be started on a pharmaceutical, but they would also be instructed or talked to about what they're eating, how their stress is, are they moving, are there supplements that would be useful. It's whole person medicine and integrating all logical and evidence-based modalities to take care of the whole person.
Leon, that was a really good question. Thank you so much for calling in. For those of you out there who may not have gotten the number, it's 1-800-552-8502. Our topic is integrative medicine tonight. We have Dr. Nicole Cotter of Integrative Medicine of Shreveport-Bossier, as well as Julie Hartley, wellness dietitian and health coach with the Willis-Knighton Health System. Dr. Cotter, what's the doctor-patient relationship like with integrative medicine? Do you change your hats, change the way you talk about patients, or is it basically the same for you?
I think that it's basically the same. I mean, the doctor-patient relationship is important whether you're in the integrative or complementary world or you're in the conventional world, and I think that any physician would say that it's of the utmost importance.
Let's say I have a cardiologist and maybe, you know, I have an orthopedic surgeon and also have a primary care doctor. If I wanted to come see you as my integrative medicine specialist, would you take over my primary care, or would I add you to my list of specialists that I already see?
Right. So in my case, I would act as a consultant. So my practice is a consultative clinic. So you would continue to follow with your cardiologist or your primary care doctor, and then I would fill in the gaps with those things that aren't typically addressed in a conventional setting. There are integrative physicians who, integrative primary care, for example, who would. You would go see that person, and they would be your primary care doctor and just take an integrative approach to your health.
So there's both approaches are available in general?
Available in the United States, yes. Perhaps not in the area.
Okay, sounds good. Again, the number is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet at RR Public Radio. Our topic tonight, integrative medicine. So, Julie, from the standpoint of how you talk to patients about their diet, let's start with, you know, garbage in, garbage out. How do we approach that subject? Because a lot of times, you know, patients, some of us, we really don't want to, you know, talk about what it is we're actually eating every day. I mean, if you actually talk to people about what it is they eat, sometimes we talk more about what the results of what their dietary habits are rather than actually going through what their daily dietary habits are. How does that discussion go with you and your clients that you see?
Well, what I find too is many people have, you know, just food amnesia. You know, they have an idea that they actually think they're eating better than they do. They're like, I really have no idea why I've gained weight or why I'm in here because I eat healthy. And it's this word healthy that, you know, really has such broad meaning and doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the same thing. And when we take an integrative approach, and I know Dr. Cotter would say, you know, the same thing, one word really stands out is personal, because when you see one person with, let's say, autoimmune disease or, you know, with all different types of disease, you've seen one person because they all have different histories. They all have different lifestyles. They all have different food intakes or food records. And so we really get down to what is going on with this person individually, because some people might be sensitive to, let's say, beans or some grains, for instance, where another person might be able to eat those and tolerate them just fine. So we can't really just throw out, you know, a blanket diet and say, okay, you've got gallbladder disease and here is your, you know, diet that we just have copies of, you know, in a file and hand them that way, because they might not work for this particular person. So that's what I really love about, you know, the whole integrative approach, is that when a person comes into the office, we are seeing that person for the very first time, and no other history are we going to look at, or no other, you know, things would really necessarily be appropriate. Now, of course, always, you know, certainly whole foods, plant-based diet, like we've talked about, less processed foods will always be a staple. You know, more healthy plant-based foods will always be a staple in everybody. But then we really personalize the approach, you know, from there. How are they sleeping? How are they eating? How are they, you know, their relationships, their stress, all of these different things. How much are they in community with other people? Love and support, huge, you know, thing. And this is just something that just never gets discussed, you know, usually at the regular doctor's office. And that's one nice thing about in our office, we get to talk about that. So the food comes up, but then all these other emotions come up when they start talking about things, because they think it's just about the food. But a lot of times we say it's not just what you're eating, it's what's eating you that can cause a lot of your symptoms and a lot of your disease states too. So it just happens that, you know, I talk about food, but it leads the way to a lot of other discussions in our office.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue. I've got a really great producer who's got a list of questions that we'll try to get through. But the next question was, you know, what is mind-body medicine? And so is that true, Dr. Cotter? Do you not only say to your patients, what are you eating, but what's eating you? What's causing you to, you know, eat too much or drink too much alcohol or, you know, not get enough exercise?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, mind-body medicine is really the use of the mind to affect health. And that looks like, you know, it can be look different in a number of different people. I mean, it could be simple as you know, incorporating something like mindfulness meditation to heart math, to all sorts of other modalities. But, you know, we know that the mind is closely connected to the gut, to the immune system, to the endocrine system, and you can influence the body by balancing the mind. And so definitely with integrative medicine, and that's really the beauty of it, it's to integrate, you know, more than just medicine and surgery. And you do that by talking to somebody about their stress, about their lifestyle, about exercise, about, you know, the things that are important to them, and try to take care of the person as a whole and look at the big picture.
You know, one of the other things that comes up is, you know, a lot of times we think that our healthcare is sort of set in stone because we have a certain genetic predisposition. Let's say everybody in our family may have been overweight, or heart attacks run in our family in, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s, or, you know, everybody in our family gets arthritis or osteoporosis. So does genetic testing play into integrative medicine at all, or how do you manage some of the things that we can't change about our lifestyle, like our DNA?
Sure. So, yeah, genetics does come into play in some patients. There's some genetic tests that I do. I don't do it on everybody, but when I think that it would be appropriate, there are a couple of things that certainly do come in there. You know, that's a really exciting field of medicine right now, you know, epigenetics and figuring out whether we're, you know, really married to the genes that we're born with. And it doesn't look like we are. And, you know, even the answer that I've given patients over the years in my rheumatology practice about, you know, what causes autoimmune disease, you know, we say it's a genetic predisposition and an environmental trigger. And that environmental trigger is probably different for everybody. And so there are things that we can do and we can modify to potentially decrease our risk or perhaps ward off some of these things, even if there does seem to be, you know, something that runs in the family or genetic predisposition to.
Right. I mean that's an amazing thing to see as a physician. You know, in neurology, I see autoimmune diseases, and you see these all the time. There's an illness in the family, or, you know, someone passes away, and you see a real medical problem emerge directly as a result of something that was completely external. I mean, how stress does affect these real biologic processes. So is there anything in terms of other lab work that you might do, or maybe speak more about, you know, what genetic tests you do order?
Well, I think that also comes into the point that Julie made earlier about personalized medicine, because there isn't a blanket panel of labs that would be appropriate for every person that comes in. And so, you know, sitting down with somebody for a long period of time and really digging into their history and you know, kind of figuring out where you want to go and look is important. So I couldn't say that there's just, you know, one thing that I'm always ordering.
Let's say, for example, you promote a diet that's less inflammatory. Would you check maybe pro-inflammatory markers before and after someone changes their diet, or is there a role for, you know, testing, levels of inflammation or cortisol levels or things along those lines?
Sure, there definitely are things that can help to guide your process and that you can look at to see if somebody is improving or not. But then, a lot of these tests have their limits as well, and so you kind of use them where they're worth. But it's not always the whole story.
Okay, Julie, what is an anti-inflammatory diet? Or maybe on the flip side, what's a pro-inflammatory diet? What do we need to stay away from?
Oh, that's very easy. A pro-inflammatory diet is the standard American diet. It's what we call it SAD. It's the SAD diet. And really, it's what 85% of most all Americans are eating today. Lots of packaged foods. You know, think about your day. You know, so it's 6 o'clock as we're recording this. And think about what you've had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Did you go through a drive-thru? Did you open a box, a wrapper, a can opener to get to any of your food today? That has been processed food. So we like to say our food really needs to come from a plant and never been through a plant, a processing plant, if that makes sense. So there's a huge difference between an apple and then applesauce, you know, or Apple Jacks, like we said. And so we still consider a lot of those things as vegetables. You know, many of our patients that we see, V8 juice is about the closest they get to, you know, any kind of vegetable. So much of our diet is pro-inflammatory, but then also you add in the other lifestyle factors. Stress is so inflammatory. In our toxic environment, you know, that we're around, makeup and, you know, hair dye and those kinds of things are also pro-inflammatory. So as much as we can stay in control, it helps so much. So that's what I really focus on as far as the diet is concerned. Plant foods are highly anti-inflammatory. Actually, many people don't realize this is where a lot of our pharmaceutical medicines originally had come from, is plant medicine, that they change molecules and then they can patent. But when we can change our diet ourselves and I've been very fortunate to be working right now with, you know, a program that changes lifestyle with Willis Knighton right now, and we've just seen absolutely amazing results. We're using lifestyle as a therapeutic approach. So we change four things: their diet, their exercise, their love and support, and their stress management. And it is truly amazing. Of course, we're seeing numbers come down. Their cholesterol, of course, looks better, and their inflammation markers, like you were saying, you know, look better. And just even to speak again about the genetics, you know, we're so used to hearing about, you know, oh, what's just runs in my family. Well, their lifestyle usually runs in their family too. So if their parents are used to processed food and not exercising, and we think that it's just the DNA, but it could also be their lifestyle factors too. But even farther, as Dr. Cotter had mentioned, you know, this epigenetics, which is another term that many people might not be familiar with, is how your lifestyle and environment are affecting your genes. We know in the program that we're currently doing right now, 500 different genes have been able to be turned off lifestyle only. This is no medication. And the, you know, exciting thing is these are things that are free. You know, we can meditate, but, you know, for free, and we can change our diet, you know, for free, and we can exercise for free, and do all of these things. So it's an exciting time, I think, for both. I wouldn't speak for doctors, but I think Dr. Cotter would probably say it's so, you know, has so much value to you when you can see patients actually get better. And they get their life back. It's not just that their inflammatory markers come down, although they do. We do measure those and see incredible results, as I know Dr. Cotter does in their practice. But it's just seeing the life come back to their eyes and, you know, and just all of the the thing. So they think they're coming in maybe for, you know, their RA, you know, their rheumatoid arthritis, and all of a sudden some skin rashes that they were going to dermatology have gone away, or, you know, just crazy things that they didn't ever think were connected, is that they're really all connected once we, you know, start taking this integrative approach.
Dr. Cutter, have you actually seen, you know, things like rheumatoid arthritis go into remission and use less of, you know, the really strong, powerful medications that, you know, are typically used for those types of problems get better and patients get off of some of the medications when they make these changes?
Yeah, I have. And I think that, you know, I think that too is a spectrum. That's a great question. Can you reverse autoimmunity once it's there? And I don't think we know the answer to that. And it's probably because in some folks you can, and in some people you're not. You know, some people are going to, you know, with the autoimmune disease like rheumatoid arthritis, you're going to need medicine. But I think that with anybody though, you can be better. And so even if you require medicines to treat your disease, if you change your diet and your lifestyle, you're going to be better than if you didn't go down that road.
Right, absolutely. From the stress standpoint, you know, a lot of times we can change our diet, but we really can't change our environment when it comes to stress. What's that conversation sound like when you start, you know, going down the pathway of stress reduction?
Right. Well, I think you can't necessarily change the stress that's in your life, but you can change the way that you respond to it. And that's where mind-body medicine can be really powerful. And so, you know, I talk with patients a lot about eliciting the relaxation response every day, which is, you know, to counteract the stress response. Your stress response is your fight or flight response, which kind of gets your heart rate up and your blood pressure up. And it's a normal physiologic response, but a lot of us in modern society live with a chronic stress response. And so doing some sort of practice every day to elicit that relaxation response, which is the opposite, and to counteract that stress response, has been shown to be beneficial. And that can be, you know, 10 minutes a day of meditation, of contemplative prayer, of yoga for some folks, for knitting, you know, in some cases can even be a way to elicit that response. And all of that can have positive physiologic benefits that can improve chronic disease.
Julie, from your standpoint, are there foods that you see patients, you know, get involved with? And I talk to a lot of our patients about, you know, writing down what they eat, you know, a food diary. Mm-hmm. Are there patterns that people get into when they're under stress that they turn to that can be destructive in terms of the way they eat when they're stressed out?
Oh, absolutely. We know
or
that.
Or drink.
Yes. Absolutely. Both of those, you know, are a way that people deal and try to heal with their stress. If, you know, that's why we really want to teach them exactly what Dr. Cotter was saying. You know, we can't necessarily change your stress. Sometimes we're married, you know, to stress, or we have the family, just having a family. And then there can be positive stressors, you know, having a new baby. That's stress, but, you know, it's a happy stress, but it's still stress. But if we can change the way we actually respond to that stress and become what we call stress resilience, makes a difference. And so how people typically want to respond to stress now is the only way they know how, is because it does have a physiological effect, is to eat food. And it's not broccoli that calms down stress. And, you know, it's usually ice creams and a lot of these heavily addictive foods and a lot of these chemical-laden foods, lots of carbohydrate-rich foods, you know, stimulate a calming response in the initial phase, but then we know it also triggers more inflammation and causes problems, you know, down the road. So a lot of those things. And then, of course, alcohol is another way that people try to, you know, deal with their stress, and because they'll get that initial calm. But again, it's, you know, can be addictive, and then it also ends up causing a lot more problems, you know, later on. So we can have both of those things. So, you know, it's not that we say that you never can have, you know, any ice cream, or you never can have a drink of alcohol, but it's how we use those and be able to not look at food necessarily as therapy, but be able to have other approaches at our fingertips. That's just really the issue, is we know the power of meditation, and there's so much great science behind that, but you know, there's nobody there to educate people on exactly how to do that.
And, you know, from the stress standpoint, I know there's some ways of combining some of these meditative practices with exercise. So can you talk a little bit about the types of exercise programs that combine this approach? I know that yoga, Tai Chi, some of these forms of exercise come to mind.
Well, you hit on two great ones right there. Yoga and Tai Chi are some of the ones, especially when we incorporate breathing, because we know breathing also, as Dr. Cotter was talking about, the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, our fight or flight, and then what we call our rest and digest, also are stimulated by, the exercise and stress. And so Tai Chi, yoga, those are excellent ones, but really just to walk, to get outside and move. I love movement of any kind is going to help, but movement outside even more, a little bit of sunshine also helps stimulate, your circadian rhythms and other kinds of hormone releases and, in the brain. But any kind of movement whatsoever, but definitely ones that are calming. I love for people to try new classes, go in and, if this is especially Tai Chi, might sound very intimidating to somebody, but if you walked into a class where there's an instructor and you get personalized attention, then maybe you could go home and do some yourself. I also encourage a lot of patients, if they're not maybe open or don't have access to a class, YouTube is fabulous. You can get lots of free meditation or Tai Chi. I do like for people to, especially in the beginning, have an instructor, someone that could watch them, watch your form, that sort of thing, especially in the beginning. But any kind of movement whatsoever, even if it's whatever you have in your house, walking up and down stairs is fantastic exercise if you're able. But we just don't know what it's like to sit still in our society, and that's one thing I have a lot of people do if they're physically challenged, depending on what their mobility is. Sometimes just sit up in the morning and do nothing for 5 minutes, but just sit and reflect. Prayer, as Dr. Cotter mentioned, is very beneficial, and just to even sit and just reflect on their day. Gratefulness, having people write down three things they're grateful for, the power of that in a person's life. You would think these things are so simple, but it's the in the simplicity is where they're so powerful.
Let's go to our next caller. We have Danny from Lufkin. Danny, thanks for calling Health Matters tonight.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing great.
Hey, my question is just, I know the internet is not always the greatest place to find information, but, sometimes you'll see cases where they say that there's alternative medicine that's been found to help treat, or in some cases cure real bad diseases like cancer and AIDS or HIV. I just want to know, and they say that Big Pharma will buy that out and they'll push it under. Because they can't make money off of it, because it's something that's widely available, and I just wanted to know if there's any real validity to that.
Great question. Sort of a far-reaching question from the standpoint of Dr. Cotter. Have you ever heard of things along those lines? Really advanced disease states being being cured by alternative treatments. Things along those lines.
I think that there is a lot of really great work being done around the country and a lot of research. So Alzheimer's is a great example of that. People working with Alzheimer's and seeing some reversal. The internet can be a scary place because you don't, you don't really know what you're getting or where the information is coming from. And so I think a lot of the, staying on reputable websites it is at least a good start. I think you have to take a lot of the things that you find on other sites with a grain of salt. And so can I say that some of the things that have been reported on the internet are not true? No. I think that there are some pretty interesting cases where there's been remarkable success in the alternative world. But there's got to be some science behind that. And so I think, finding somebody with some credentials and that can help tease that out for a person is really important.
From the standpoint of someone, speaking of disease states, let's say, people listening, they have certain conditions that they see traditional medical providers for. What sort of conditions would you encourage them to consider an integrative medicine approach for?
I think that, like I said, you know, earlier, that integrative medicine doesn't really belong to any one specialty. So, I mean, I see a number of different kind of scenarios. Some folks come to see me because they're healthy and they want to stay that way. I see other people who are very happy with their established, conventional care, and they just want to know what else. So what else could I be doing to improve my particular condition? And then I see some people who haven't made progress at all with Western medicine, and maybe it's, we're really good at treating acute disease in traditional medicine, and we're not so great at some of these chronic diseases. And so that's where I think integrative and functional medicine can really shine for some of these, if I were to come up with some examples, irritable bowel syndrome, even things like hypertension, diabetes, have really, really great even evidence and research behind doing more than just pharmaceuticals and surgeries.
This is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and our topic tonight is integrative medicine. With us tonight, we have two great guests. We have Dr. Nicole Cotter of Integrative Medicine of Shreveport-Bossier and Julie Hartley, wellness dietitian and health coach with the Willis-Knighton Health System. You can call and ask us a question tonight about this topic if you'd like. The number is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet at RRR Public Radio. Julie, from the standpoint of the different types of foods that people eat, one of the things I'm asked almost every day when I order my salad, if I, have to get it out, what kind of protein would you like for that? Would you like a nice juicy piece of steak on top of your romaine lettuce? Or would you like, shrimp or chicken or fish or some sort of, added component that may or may not be as healthy as what's underneath. Is there legitimate benefit to adding those types of proteins, so to speak, to our vegetable plant-based diet?
Well, we do have areas where, like the program I specifically work with is, there's no animal products, but then I also have patients where we add in, protein in the form of animal products, and they, thrive and do healthy, more along the lines of a Mediterranean style, diet has certainly have benefits. And we don't want to exclude necessarily any particular one area, but I do like to always emphasize that vegetables and your whole foods will always be the star of your plate. It really needs to take up 50% of your plate. So when you go out a lot of times and you order a salad, it will mostly be meat, and then you'll have this like little kale stuck on the side, or mostly for decorations. That's typically where our vegetables have been relegated to, side dishes is what we call them. And so I try to flip that and say that meat now needs to be a side dish. And so really you can have meat, a lot of different, different types. Certainly we'd like them not fried. And, fish is usually better. Oilier fish, can certainly be better than different types. But whatever type that you choose, whether it is, like a grass-fed beef, we really do like to know where the source of the meat is coming from. We typically say you are what you eat, but you are what your animals eat as well. So are all of our animals, even fish, people don't think about fish being farmed, raised. And when they're in that state, they're not eating things that fish would typically eat. Our cows are not eating grass like they would typically eat. And so we just have a sourcing issue from that. But if you did get healthy, good quality, animal products, they still need to be small, and they still need to be, what we call the side dish. And the vegetables always still need to, take the biggest part of the plate. Right now, we've gone so far off the mark. If you went to a restaurant and ordered a steak, for instance, you would get a 17-ounce steak would typically be what, the current order is. And what we know, and when a typical serving size, or what a official serving size of meat is 3 ounces. So even when people, 3 to 4 ounces of meat versus a 17-ounce, steak is what you would be getting at you know, at a restaurant. So you can see how way far off people are thinking about their meat. So even if they cut back in half, let's say, they're still eating way, way too much, you know, protein. And the other myth that I like to, you know, really discuss with patients, and this, you know, throws a lot of people off, is that you can get protein from vegetables and that it doesn't always have to come from meat. So in many cases, we use, you know, meat in a diet, and it works great as long as we keep it, you know, to where it needs to be. But in other cases, for some people, you know, the exclusion of animal products and just, you know, having an exclusive plant-based meal is great for other people, too. So we can certainly use it, you know, whenever we want it.
Yes, certainly those animals do a pretty good job of developing muscle mass with a plant-based diet, right?
Right, right.
So what sort of examples of proteins would you say people could find in a plant-based diet?
Beans, you know, are one of the biggest source. All different kinds of beans, you know, are great sources. And you know, we still use tofu. I always laugh, and I said tofu needs a marketing job, because that name just doesn't, you know, like, for people don't run to the store to pick that up. But it really is so convenient, and you know, it cooks really well. It has, you know, a lot of good benefits, and then it also is very inexpensive. One of the things that we talk about is that people's misconceptions is that eating healthy is so expensive to do. But when we eat a whole food plant-based diet and really limit the meat, a lot of our meat is what causes, you know, the expense in the diet. And then, of course, a lot of the junk food that they buy, too. But when we cut back and eat smaller portions of meat, larger portions of produce, we can really do that, you know, well, being able to do that well.
And obviously, that's a big component in the so-called keto diet, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of protein. Is the keto diet healthy? How's that panning out?
Well, of course, it's, you know, it's the big fad, and it is so broad. So I see people that do, you know, keto, and they just go through McDonald's and throw away their bun and, you know, eat five meat patties. Not a good idea. And then there's people that do, you know, what we call plant-based, more of a plant-based keto, where they do lots of healthy fat. So really, the component of keto, if they're doing it correctly, is really not low carb, high protein. That's more of the Atkins style, which we know really caused a lot of, you know, more issues. But the keto diet is really more moderate protein. It is still lower carbs. It's more moderate protein, but the emphasis more on fats. And so this is where it gets confusing for a lot of people, is that I'll see a lot of people post on social media things that they're like, oh, my keto bowl, and that's just completely, you know, full of just meat, and that's it, you know. And that's really, we know, is not going to be a healthy diet. It's a pro-inflammatory diet if, you know, if they do it that way. But we, you know, I do counsel people that if that's what they want to do, and for different things, you know, having more of a plant-based focus. Remember, you know, we'll always say whole foods, plant-based will be at the center of anything. And then maybe we tweak it for different people. So maybe we tweak it with the grains and beans. Beans might not be a great avenue for some people. So we would, you know, use different ones. But the emphasis is of keto being on healthy fats like, you know, avocados and things like, you know, and things like that. So we, in the whole word keto is actually about ketosis, you know, is where that comes. And a lot of people can have the benefits of ketosis actually just by fasting. So we have a lot of people that do plant-based, you know, still, you know, doing a whole foods plant-based, but then add in fasting and can get a lot of the benefits too. So it's really, you know, just exciting to see that not one way is the right way for everybody.
And speaking of fads, the other question that comes up is, you know, this issue with gluten and gluten sensitivity. And we know, Dr. Cotter, the traditional gluten allergy is a really, it's a true allergy, right? Is there any basis to eliminating gluten altogether? Is it pro-inflammatory in general, or is this is that a misnomer?
I think it really depends on the person. So, right, so, you know, the gluten allergy we really put in the space of a celiac disease, and so right. Those patients should completely exclude gluten. However, there many people will have what could be called a non-celiac gluten sensitivity, or just a sensitivity or an intolerance to the gluten or the wheat, and that's a really real scenario. And so, again, I think it depends on the person. I, you know, do a lot of elimination diets in my clinic where we're taking out some of the most common offenders that can be problematic, and gluten probably tops that list. And so it can be worth, in many scenarios, pulling it out for a certain amount of time, and then you can reintroduce and see how you do. So, but certainly if a person is sensitive to it, then that will be an inflammatory food for them.
Let's go to our next caller. We have Ursula from Shreveport. Ursula, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Good evening. I have a question for your guest with regards to vitiligo, and I was wondering if they have any experience with, you know, the condition getting better or at least not progressing, especially with regards to a whole foods, plant-based diet like Dr. Esselstein recommends for heart disease. So, thank you.
Okay, great questions. Dr. Cotter, I know you're not a dermatologist, but vitiligo, is that something that you encountered in your training as something that might respond to an integrative approach?
Sure. So I think the question with anything, you know, like whether it's vitiligo or really any disease, is what would be the root cause? And that's really where you kind of get into the functional medicine space where, you know, functional medicine is the medicine of kind of root cause and looking for what's causing the problem. And if you can fix that, then the problem won't exist. And so there are some, I would probably say, case reports and some observations where people with vitiligo have responded to dietary change, whether it's from exclusion of things like gluten or dairy, or often with skin conditions in general, we look at the gut, and is there some imbalance in the gut that can be manifesting in the skin? And so I think that it's something to look at, and we certainly do that in the integrative setting.
Round up all the usual suspects, right? Julie, from the dietary standpoint, I know you've talked a lot about the plant-based diet. Is there good data about heart protection with that?
Oh, there's, you know, over 40 years is one of the, you know, ones that we have the most long-term data on, over 40 years of research. And then we know that the longer that patients do that, the even better. So this is one of the only areas that we can say we don't just manage disease, that we can actually reverse heart disease. Dr. Ornish's research is, just fantastic. Not just with 1 year, if they stay on it even 5 years, even more reversal after 5 years, you know, with that as well too. So I kind of want to just if I can just, you know, go back to Danny's question. It just reminded me, when he was talking about, you know, the approach, and it is still kind of the Wild West sometimes out there, because really right now somebody could just say, oh, I do alternative or complementary medicine, and you know, sometimes those terms really still haven't been, you know, defined like they exactly need to. And it's not like you just ask for, you know, one specific thing from your doctor and you would know that they know everything. But you know, what I usually tell people is the risk to benefit ratio of changing your lifestyle. We really just don't have to have 500 studies, you know, randomized control trials to know that you just need, you know, if you breathe more or move more or eat more vegetables, we really are not going to cause you harm if you start to change your lifestyle. So, you know, even if you didn't find necessarily a physician or one that you in your town that you could work with, start to do some of those things already by yourself, and you will, you know, have tremendous benefits. But, you know, just like the gluten sensitivity, I know Dr. Cotter's probably seen this too. You know, we get a lot of this, well, where's the research on this? Well, where's, you know, the research on this? And sometimes if we just take it out of a patient's diet and they get better, you know, that to us is, you know, the best. And I can tell you, the patients will tell you, you know, there's some that have said, I haven't felt this good in 20 years. You know, I don't care what, you know, the latest study is that taking gluten out made a huge difference. And I see these patients, and I'm sure you probably have all the time. And it's like, why wouldn't we do that? Why, you know, if dairy is causing an issue and you take it out and you feel better, you know, why wouldn't you do that? It's like the patient that goes to the doctor and says, doctor, when I do this, it hurts. And he says, well, don't do that. You know, sometimes it can just be that simple, and we don't have to have, 5 degrees behind our name in order to tell somebody to do that.
Yeah, it reminds me of a satirical piece I read in the British Medical Journal arguing for randomized controlled trials looking at parachutes in yes. mitigating the effects of gravity, right?
Right.
Sometimes it just makes too much sense,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
So what sort of exercise should we be doing in terms of exercise? Should we do mostly strength training? Should we do mostly cardio? Or does it depend on what disease we're trying to prevent or treat?
Really, there, I like for people to get a variety, and I really like to explain the difference between exercise and movement, because we're getting into the area where so many of us have technology jobs, or we sit all day, and we call them exercise and couch potatoes. And so what happens is that we sit all day, we go to the gym, and maybe go to a CrossFit class for 30 minutes or an hour, and then we come back and we sit all day, you know, the rest of the day. And so we need to incorporate movement of all different kinds. So we like to say motion is lotion. We need to continue to move the joints and move. And that, again, it doesn't have to be running a marathon, walking to the mailbox. I like for people to set maybe a timer on their phone and every hour get up and, you know, walk around for 5 minutes. But in addition to that, we still need to get, you know, some cardio work, you know, and get our heart rate up. I'm a big fan of high intensity training. But again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a CrossFitter or somebody, you know, it could be as walk as much with as much intensity as you can to the stop sign and then recover for 2 minutes. Also a big fan of balance training, like, you know, like yoga and Tai Chi. I think we need all of it. But the one of, you know, the things I also start with is the best exercise is just going to be the one you're going to do. So find something fun. You know, if it's tennis, you know, maybe not, you know, everybody would like yoga. So let's find something else that you're going to do. But we really want to try to change it up too. We don't want our body and, you know, muscles to adapt to just the same thing. So really get out there and try new things. But the point is to get up there and do something.
Yeah, we were talking about baseball earlier, right? So overuse of one particular mm-hmm. body part may, you know, actually, you know, cause more harm than good. So let's go to our next caller. We have Terry from Kilgore.
Yes, I wanted to know how nuts should play in your diet, how much and what types. You always hear about them as being great for your health.
Great question, Terry. Julie, what do you think? What sort of...
I'm nuts about nuts?
Yeah.
They have lots of, you know, some good research behind those. Very specifically, walnuts are very good. You know, most, really any kind of nut, Brazil nuts, and they all have different, you know, components. You know, walnuts are, you know, great omega-3s, and, you know, Brazil nuts are high in selenium. And so getting a great variety. I love pecans. All different types of nuts are great. Peanuts, however, are not really nuts. This is what most people get. You know, they're actually a legume. And so most people, when you go to the store, get trail mix. They're chocolate covered most of the time. Or they're, and I'm not knocking that. I actually like a few of those chocolate covered almonds every now and then. Or they have too much salt on them. And a lot of times they're in oil. So I love, you know, different variety of nuts. The ones that I, you know, just mentioned are the ones that, you know, typically have a healthier, more mineral profile about them too. Try to get them raw and unsalted. But one thing I also like to tell people too is that because they're so convenient and people hear that they are healthy, is that we keep them around like candy. And so we're really overdoing it on nuts. We need to have it a sprinkling, like a scant handful of nuts is really about all you need for the benefits. And they are very high in calories too. And so we tend to overdo it, I find, in, you know, in this area, because they're easy. If I can, you know, pick up pretty much any woman's purse, and they'll probably have some trail mix, you know, and some commercial trail mix in there too. So nuts are fantastic to have in your diet. Put them on that salad, you know, sprinkle them in your salad or put them in a smoothie, but try not to just snack on them, you know, throughout the day, because you really just get out of control.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Great question. From the standpoint, you mentioned, you know, some of the things in nuts, which brings me to the question about supplements. So if we have this great plant-based diet and we use, you know, a variety of different vegetables and things like legumes and nuts and minimized protein, do we need anything else? Do we need extra vitamins, extra minerals, extra herbs and things along those lines? Dr. Cotter, do you recommend supplements, or is it a case-by-case thing for you?
It's definitely a case-by-case thing. I think that there's some things that we probably could all benefit from, like taking a daily multivitamin, just because even if you're eating the best diet with our food source, we're probably a little deficient in certain areas. But then it really is a case-by-case basis. You know, I tell patients a lot, well, the last thing I want to do is send you home with a pharmacy of supplements, because you can just replace your 10 pharmaceuticals for 20 supplements and you don't really know why you're taking them. So I think, as with a pharmaceutical, we have to know why you're taking it. And is it in the right dose, and is there a reason? And usually it's a shorter term rather than a long term thing for me.
And you mentioned the science, you know, when you were going through your fellowship. What does the science look like for things, you know, like carnitine and, you know, the different herbs and supplements and, you know, even marijuana? What is the science like for some of the things that are coming out?
Well, and there's a lot of good science behind some of these supplements. I think that it's challenging, particularly when you're talking about, say, vitamins and minerals, to do those studies, because how do you really test whether somebody is going to benefit from one specific vitamin when they could be getting in their diet as well? And also, if you're just, you know, we can get really reductionist with this. If you're just, they call this nutritionism, if you're just looking at, say, vitamin B12 and really pushing that vitamin, then how is that affecting all these other things? You know, if you're somebody supplementing just with calcium alone for bone health, then you're not talking about other things that are important, like magnesium and vitamin K, and how, if you're getting those things from food, you're going to absorb it differently than if you just take it in a pill form. But there definitely is science behind some of these, and I think it also is a work in progress. You know, things change all the time, and we're learning more every day.
We have maybe time for one more question. The number is 1-800-552-8502, and Twitter is live and active. You can tweet at RRR Public Radio. Julie, we mentioned alcohol just a little bit earlier. So from the standpoint of what you talked to your clients about, can, you know, part of this perfect dietary lifestyle that we're dreaming about tonight, is alcohol in that lifestyle at all?
Yeah, it absolutely can be in a healthy way. So two of the things that I really specifically talk about around alcohol is, first of all, you know, asking them, you know, what they're currently doing. And usually they'll say, I have a glass. And so I have to really define that. What is a glass? Because if you've seen some of wine glasses, you know, at people's houses, you can fit half a bottle in there. A serving size of wine is 4 ounces. So everybody's homework listening is to go to your cupboard and get your 4 ounces. It's a half, you know, it's just a half of a cup. And pour your wine in your half of a cup measuring cup, and then pour it in your wine glass and see what that serving size is. And so that really is a serving. The other thing I like to talk about around the use of alcohol is, how are they doing it? You know, when we talk about blue zone studies, if we've mentioned that before, studies where the people live longest in different areas, and the way that they use alcohol is in social settings. It's fellowship. It's around, you know, other people. And so if you're drinking alone and lots of it, that's quite a bit different and has a different effect on your body physiologically than if you are in a social situation and you're just drinking, you know, small amounts of alcohol too. So yes, the answer to that question is yes. Alcohol can, you know, play a role and even can be beneficial in some cases if we monitor how much, and then we monitor, you know, how they're exactly using it, and not, you know, again, as a treatment for stress.
Perfect. That is all the time we have for tonight. And thank you all so much for listening to Health Matters. Our guests have been Dr. Nicole Cotter of Integrative Medicine of Shreveport and Bossier. We also would like to thank Ms. Julie Hartley. She is wellness and dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Healthcare System. It's been a pleasure to be with you guys tonight. And as you know, Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The views and opinions expressed tonight on Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer tonight is Renee Moran. Phone assistance tonight has been provided by Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Mr. Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday night for another edition of Health Matters. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.